This is your second novel. How did you get into writing fiction? Because you're better known, obviously, as a broadcaster, but also for your non-fiction books.
You're very kind to say better known. I thought you were going to say better as a broadcaster.
We'll leave that till later.
We'll leave that till later on. Well, the reason is that I've spent, you know, almost all my adult life observing politics from the side, being around it, you know, treading the corridors of power, drinking in the pubs of power, all of that kind of stuff. And over that period, I've absorbed ideas and stories and ways of looking at the political world that, as an ordinary reporter, you simply can't get out there in a normal news report, but I think are significant and people need to understand in order to realise exactly how politics works. And therefore, it struck me that light novels trying to go into some of that would be a useful addition to the conversation.
Is it partly something inside of you bursting to get out that is slightly constrained by the broadcasting that you do, obviously, on your Sunday morning show and on Radio 4?
Absolutely right. I mean, people come to you, I'm sure, as well as to me, and they tell you stories, and you think, wow, that's fantastic, that's extraordinary, do you really think that? And yet you can't go on air or go onto the page of a newspaper and retell that story for all sorts of reasons. You can, in the guise of fiction, use that material, and some of it's the most interesting material I've got.
Now, how did you come up with the idea for, we'll talk about the first book in a bit, but the second book, which is a bit of I'm looking at it in front of you, it's a bit of a doorstep, isn't it?
It's a quick read, yeah. a quick, easy, enjoyable and light read. It's, so the story actually comes from something that Tony Blair said to me, and I think he said elsewhere, which is the extraordinary frustration of a man with his coterie around him, who knows how to run things. He knows where all the levers of power are and how to pull them and the buttons and the pulleys and all the rest of it. He knows how to get stuff done. And yet, nobody will listen to him ever again because of the Iraq War. So he has the knowledge of how to get the country moving, but without the political impetus and authority to do anything about it himself. And that's probably the case for the rest of his life. So I then started to think, well, if I was Tony Blair, how might I deal with this situation? And the answer is, what you can do, of course, you can't do it yourself, but you can use your understanding of politics to grow another generation of politicians, as it were, genetically modified MPs.
The sort of Liz Kendall of this world.
As it were, yeah. And you teach them all the dark tricks. You teach them how to speak in public, however. You teach them how to handle committees, how to dodge the Daily Mail when the Daily Mail are after you, all of that kind of stuff. And those MPs, therefore, are kind of supercharged. Therefore, they rise to the top of the party and they can take it back over again for your way of seeing things. And so that was the idea behind it. And the novel is about two of these, as it were, Blairite MPs trying to wrest back control of the Labour Party from an ineffectual, if once popular, left-wing leader who's now in power by using all the dirty tricks. And, of course, they fall out with each other.
Now, bearing in mind what's happened this year, and you presumably wrote this way before Jeremy Corbyn was even thought of by Jeremy Corbyn, it's a sort of sign of things to come, maybe.
It is a sign of things to come. If I had only given my left-wing Prime Minister, who's called Alwyn Grimaldi, a beard rather than a white suit, then I think I'd have been spot on. But
where do you come up with these names? Because I remember in Head of State you had some very peculiar names. Alwar Haydn,
A.H. Alwar Schickelgruber was Hitler's father's name, and A.H. of course refers to Adolf Hitler. He's not one of the more popular figures in that novel. Alwyn Grimaldi, because I wanted some. He's partly Welsh, and that's important, so Alwyn, a good Welsh name. Grimaldi, because the Grimaldis were a very famous family of clowns.
Simple as that. Because I always thought if I ever wrote a novel, I might just sort of pick names out of the yellow pages or something.
Extremely dangerous. Most of those people living next door to you or round the corner.
Now, whenever I interview people about novels, it's quite difficult because you don't want to give the entire plot away, otherwise people then won't buy the book. But how is this different in structure, in tone, to your first novel, Head of State?
Head of State was an idea that, I think we discussed this before, that was given to me by somebody else, the idea of a prime minister just ahead of a very important, crucial decisional period. I turn it in a European referendum, who dies in number 10, and how long that can be hidden from the general public. And that involved me in an incredibly complex plot, moving with different timescales, lots of moving parts. And some people find it just too complicated a plot. So this is a much simpler plot. It's a very straightforward one. It's perfectly obvious from relatively early on that it's a fight between two people, and you follow the fight all the way through to the end.
How is it different writing a novel to doing your normal book, I mean, History of the World? I mean, that was a mammoth task. It must have been an incredibly difficult project. But it's almost like a different I mean, okay, it's still writing, but it's a completely different way of writing, isn't it?
Completely different thing. Something like The History of the World, and so far, I shouldn't say this, except with fingers and toes crossed, so far nobody has come up with a major, or indeed minor, error of fact in The History of the World, which I'm very proud of. History of the World required hundreds of thousands of hours sitting in libraries talking to people, enormous amounts of research, and it's about boiling stuff down, saying, what is the real story behind this? What is the nub of this? And it's very, very hard work over a period of time. A novel, by contrast, is more like relaxation. I can't type anymore since my stroke. I'm one-handed, so I dictate it, and I sit down in sort of on holiday or quiet times of the day and just dictate it.
How difficult was that to get used to? Because there are a lot of writers who used to say, well, I can't type. I want to write it out in longhand like I've always done.
Exactly.
Now, I actually find it difficult to write in longhand. Well, obviously, I can still do it. But if I write an article, I sit at a piece of paper. If I'm actually writing it with a pen, I have to have a keyboard in front of me.
I was always exactly the same. I said I couldn't think without typing. And if my fingers aren't moving, I can't think. And therefore, it was a big shock and a big change to learn to do it through dictation. I then discovered, of course, lots of writers have dictated over time, famously Barbara Cartland lying back on her chaise longue with a large pink gin or whatever.
I've got this image in my mind of you on one chaise longue and her on the other.
But more to the point, the great Isaiah Berlin, the philosopher, dictated everything. He never wrote a sentence in his life.
Tony Benn's diaries, all dictated.
All dictated. Now, the difference is, first of all, these days you have to use software, and no software is perfect. And therefore, I've done another book about poetry, for instance, lots of strange names in that. And you have to watch it like a hawk to go back, because the dictation system will insert all sorts of hilarious mistakes. I was writing about Scotland, and I was talking about the Soul Tire, the Scottish flag, and this came out as Soul, S-O-L-E, Tire, T-Y-R-E, all over the place.
There's a joke there somewhere.
I guess there is, but
so
you have to be very careful.
You just say you've written a book about poetry, you've done a book of your artwork, you write history, you write politics, now novels. Obviously, they're all very different genres. Do you do it because you just want a new challenge? Is that part of it?
I have a butterfly mind. I get bored very, very quickly, mainly with myself, and I always want to try something else. For me at the moment, by far the most important thing is my painting, much more important than anything I'm writing. But I do require, I need a day which is full of deadlines, full of challenges, and writing is part of that. So if I don't have a big non-fiction work on the go, then fiction is the obvious thing to do, because you can do it without the research, without sitting in the libraries and so on.
And the painting fascinates me. I know nothing about painting, so you could present anything to me and I'd say how brilliant. but you mentioned your stroke earlier. I mean, what effect has that had on the way that you paint?
Enormous effect. I was always a very traditional sort of Sunday painter. In other words, I would go on holiday down to Devon, usually also to Scotland, and I'd go outside with my easel and my oil paints, and I'd find a view, and I would work on it for about 5 or 6 hours until I thought the painting was ready, and then I'd leave it behind. I can't do that anymore. If the wind blows, the painting falls over, I can't put it back again. I can't put up an easel. I can't deal with lots of glasses of
oil. You always paint on your own. There's no one there with you at all.
I've always painted by myself, right. Yes. And I can't deal with all the kind of practical stuff. I'm effectively one-handed and one-legged. And to be honest, it just doesn't work anymore. So I'm very lucky. I've now got a studio in somebody else's house, just a bedroom, where I can paint inside. But that means I'm painting from inside my head, which quite quickly means I'm painting abstract pictures, not representational pictures. And that is much, much harder than I ever thought it was possible to be. I'm struggling away, having a fantastic time. My style is changing week by week. And I've done some good pictures, a lot of very bad pictures, but some good ones, I think.
And what's your aim with it?
My aim with it is, it's not to have an exhibition or to show them to anyone else. It is purely for myself. If I, in the course of a few weeks, paint a picture so that when I come back into the studio a few days later, I look at it, I think that really works. That work gives me an emotional kick. It's coherent. The structure is right. The colours are correct. And I've really made it work, then that just gives me an enormous feeling of satisfaction. If one day somebody sees it, so much the better, but that's not the point.
How far would you say you have recovered from the stroke? I mean, clearly you've still got a little bit of physical incapacity.
Percentages are very difficult. I think mentally, completely, though I still get tired, I think physically, if we're playing percentages, I'd say 60% perhaps. I can walk without a stick. I can walk quite long distances, but I'm weaving like a drunken sailor. I can't go very fast. I can't run. I can't cycle. I can't ski. I can't swim. My left arm is very, very useless. I mean, I can use it for some things, to hold and stabilize things, but I can't use it to tie shoelaces or tie a tie or pick up a fork when I'm eating. So there's a long way to go.
And have you got used to that, or are there still moments when you either want to scream or you do scream?
I get very, very angry and frustrated and depressed from time to time. It's important not to get used to it, I think, Ian, because if you get used to it, then you kind of give up. If you don't get used to it, you carry on doing the extremely boring physiotherapy, trying to get better, and that's important. So I try not to get used to it.
Was there a time when you wondered if you would be able to come back to broadcasting?
Absolutely. Immediately after the stroke, I not only I couldn't stand, for a start, and I could only sit in a kind of slump, but above all, my face had gone very one-sided, and I couldn't speak clearly and coherently. And because a stroke hits all of one side of your body, in my case, the left-hand side, everything can go. So my left lung wasn't working properly. So I'd run out of air. I'd be talking to you like this, and I'd start to run out of air. It's not very good
if you're
a broadcaster.
No, no.
It doesn't work very well on radio or TV. So no, I was worried for a while.